Today's episode of Flags Fly Forever is brought to you by Loot Crate. Our presenting sponsor, Loot Crate, is a monthly subscription box service for geeks, nerds, comic book lovers, and pop culture aficionados. You know who you are. Every month, subscribers receive a mystery box full of collectible items, figurines, apparel, and memorabilia. For less than $20 a month, you receive 6 to 8 items in each box that contains at least $45. Yeah, $45 in value. And many of the items are created exclusively for the Loot Crate community, which means you can't buy some of these items anywhere else. Each crate has a theme centered around major franchise releases, theatrical releases, and events. June's theme is Dystopia. It features items from classics like RoboCop, Terminator 2, Judgment Day, The Matrix, one of my favorites, as well as new favorites like Bioshock Infinite and Fallout 4. You still have a couple of days until June 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific to subscribe and receive this month's crate. Make sure to head over today to lootcrate.com/BP to subscribe today. So thanks once again to Loot Crate, and we're going to kick things off. We have a very special episode tonight. Mike Gianella is here from BP, as always, and we're going to have Rudy Gamble of Razzball as well. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Done. Here's to us, November, and the waning sun, and all the proofs I'd like to prove. We go down tonight.
Welcome to episode 95 of Flags Fly Forever. I'm your host, George Bissell of Baseball Prospectus, and I'm joined this week by Mike Gianella, making his triumphant return to the show after a couple of weeks off. Mike, how's it going tonight?
Pretty good. Glad to be back. Got to see a bunch of minor league baseball and scout some of the future stars up in Lehigh Valley, a bunch of Phillies. It was fun. Saw Ozzie Albies, too.
Yeah, I heard you were there with Tristan and Eric, and then Brett was there one night. You've gone to quite a few games lately.
Yeah, I'm rubbing elbows with the stars.
It's got to feel good. We have a special guest here for tonight's show.
Speaking of stars.
Yeah, Rudy Gamble of Razzball is here with us. Rudy, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, I didn't get invited to this Pennsylvania minor league party. I didn't know.
Yeah, there's cheesesteaks and everything. I hear it's a grand old time there in Lehigh.
Yeah, it's bring your own scrapple though.
Pretty much.
I think everything but the scrapple they pretty much have at Lehigh Valley in terms of food though. Any kind of like fat or, you know, imaginable.
Wait, do they have pork roll?
Yeah, I think they call it pork roll on the side of the border, but they do have some kind of pork roll.
Yeah, or Taylor ham's the other name for it. Yep. That's good stuff.
That's a big North Jersey, South Jersey argument, the Taylor ham versus the pork roll. And I think we've already lost George.
Okay, I have no idea what you're talking about right now. But
that's a theme on the show, Rudy. George, usually it's cultural references from like the early 80s, but yeah, we've, you know, gone into pork products instead.
Well, why do you keep talking about malls? I don't understand. What about exits?
But Rudy, I saw on Twitter you were down at the, what was it, a Friday Night Lights reunion thing going on down there in Texas the other day?
Yeah, they have a TV fest out here, and as part of it, because Friday Night Lights is the most well-known Austin TV show, we actually went out to the football field, which is like an abandoned Pop Warner stadium a couple miles outside of the airport. So I'd never known it was there. You make a left and you're like, there's the Panthers field house. and then we get on the field. I'm like, the field looks a lot more like East Dillon than West Dillon. Oh. If you remember like season 5 when he goes to the bad side of the tracks.
Right.
The Michael B. Jordan years.
Yep.
That's true. Yeah, so I got to it was a solid turnout by the stars. I didn't necessarily hobnob, but it was pretty cool being on the field.
Yes, yeah.
A lot of love for the Friday Night Lights crew out here.
Oh yeah.
Because every time we could watch us, you know, watch an episode, you know, they'll do their in their establishing shots. It's like, oh, that's the chocolate shop down the road, or you know, something like that.
It's pretty cool. I was a huge fan of that show, so that's pretty cool. Any Coach Taylor sightings or no?
No, we don't know. He wasn't there. We saw him once on an airplane. He was like, it was like our first trip with our like baby daughter, and we're walking on, and I see him and try to be cool. And then my wife's there, and you know, she chucks the baby and then falls into his arms. I'm like, that's not cool.
Really? That's amazing.
No. She just goes, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, come on, make a right. And he goes, that's a fresh one. So he lives out here, but I think he was filming something. But Connie Britton was here.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Yep.
She shocked the crowd by addressing everyone. Hey, y'all.
That's good. No Riggins either. I promise there's some fantasy baseball coming, people. I swear to you. We'll get to it.
There was no Riggins or Sorensen, but Mama Sorensen was there partying it up. And Landry's band, Crucifix Victorious, was good stuff.
Landry. That guy was pretty cool. He actually was in Breaking Bad, which is hilarious to me.
He's in Fargo now. He's definitely doing as well as just about anyone on that show.
Yeah, he'll always be Landry to me. Forever. Let's actually talk some fantasy baseball. We should probably do that at some point. I want to start with Labor Mixed. You guys are both in that league. I'll throw it out to Rudy first because he went after the big name there, and that was Carlos Estevez, who was the high bid this week, along with Tim Anderson, who we'll talk about in a moment. But Estevez went for $17.
Well, I won him for $17 here.
Okay.
And I just picture him as like the youngest child of Martin Sheen. with maybe slightly better control than Charlie Sheen exhibited in Major League. I started the year with Ken Giles and Flyers as my relievers. One of those Flyers was Jeremy Jeffress, but one of them was not anyone else. It wasn't like I didn't handcuff Giles or stuff. So I've been going on one closer. So I needed one and just took a shot on him. The crazy thing on that one was, yeah, so the next bid was $3. So the $17 comes off as an overpay. And then in the tout mix draft, I go to 113 for him out of 1,000. And the winning bid's 117. I got outbid by $4 or like 2%.
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably closer to 4%. I'm doing the math, but yeah. But yeah, ridiculously like small overbid. So you just don't know on that stuff. It's like, I guess it makes it more fun than if you have like that victory process that kind of lets people who crazy overbid get saved from their profligacy.
Yeah, that's a theme we've been talking about quite a bit on the show throughout the year, and Mike's touched on this a lot, that he actually, I think, prefers this format because you really have to be confident in your bids, and if you make a crazy overpay, you kind of have to live with it. That's kind of been your stance all along, right, Mike?
Yeah, the only thing in labor mix that I don't like, and in labor in general, is there are no $0 bids. So I kind of don't like the idea that without victory, you can run out of money really quickly. But yeah, otherwise, I kind of like the idea. We'll get to this when we get into Tout Wars in the NL, where this happened with a couple players. I really like the idea of having to kind of bid. And if your bid's wildly off, well, you that's the money you want to spend. Victory to me is kind of a cop-out where, you know, you bid 20, the guy, the next guy bid 3, and you get him for 4. It's like, well, I mean, that's great, but it offers this level of protection that most leagues don't have. I don't know too many people really outside of the tout leagues that use Vickery.
Yeah, one of the other big buys this week was Tim Anderson of the White Sox for $17. Rudy, I'll start with you first on Anderson. In the past, when we've talked about Anderson on this show, it's usually been with Brett. Sayer, who's big on the prospect side of things, and he's talked a lot about how there might be a pretty steep adjustment curve here with Anderson just based on his overall profile, but he hasn't looked overmatched so far at the plate in his brief time in the majors. What are sort of your expectations for Anderson going forward, and how high should fantasy owners really be on him the rest of the season? Because it looks like he's going to hold down this job the rest of the way in Chicago.
Yeah, well, one thing worth noting was he was my last pick in this of the labor draft. I had taken a flyer on him, and then once it was clear that, you know, I think it was before they signed Rollins, and I already had drafted Orlando Arcia as a prospect. I was thinking, okay, if one of those two gets out in spring training, super. So it's a little annoying that Tim Anderson's the one that gets called up and not Orlando Arcia, as Milwaukee just doesn't seem to care about getting to 75 wins. I think what Brett's alluding to is, you know, his strikeout rate, I think, was, you know, has been pretty high in the, you know, for a guy with no power. I can't see him being a great on base percentage guy. It doesn't, you know, it surprises me they got him hitting leadoff. I would have thought they would have taken the pressure off and had him hit an 8 or 9. I think he's a, you know, he's what on Razzball we call a Sagnoff. Yeah, which is steals ain't got no face. You know, and I think the bid's fine if you've got basically an open, if you have a dead shortstop spot or you're in need of steals. I think it's worth it. I do think he stays there, but I could, you know, if he had some hitting like 230, it wouldn't surprise me at all.
We were, you know, something we've talked about on the show all year, Rudy, is the fact that part of the reason these bids seem okay to me, last year was the year of the rookie. You had all these rookies, you know, come up who weren't available. You know, to point out to our listeners, and, you know, many of them are, you know, already know this, but, you know, you can't speculate during the season and labor on rookies. So, you know, you can't bet a buck on somebody or $2, you know, who's in the minors in April. So, you know, you can draft someone like Tim Anderson like you did, but once he's cut, you can't speculate on him until he's actually with the team. So really, to me, it's kind of okay to make these bids because who's coming down the pike? There really aren't a lot of players who are out there compared to last year in the minors who look like big impact guys. There's a couple, but I suspect that a lot of teams are going to be sitting there with a big pile of fab at the end of the year unless they spend it on guys like Anderson.
I think that's a good point. I mean, I think for a team like mine where I'm playing a little bit of catch up on saves, yeah, I don't mind. Yeah, I'd like to keep some fab around to grab closers in August, September. I do tend to be the type that I'm a volume bidder. I do like to get these $1 and $2, you know, guys that maybe look good for the week, and then, you know, particularly position players, and then, you know, see where it goes. I think last year I did that with like Matt Duffy. It was just like a random week. He might have been in Colorado, and that, and then basically he filled in for me at like MI the whole year. I think it's, I said, if you need stolen bases and, you know, like no one's MI is usually great, but if you had a basically a dead spot, $17, you know, seems like going rate. And I like that one better than Peter O'Brien for $17, not to jump ahead.
No,
but look at that right segue. There.
Yeah.
that was an excellent segue. Wow. We're
speaking
never really
of $17
like that,
bids, talking about fab. You know, because I just don't like guys with, you know, the one thing I don't love is playing time concerns. And, you know, like I get it on the Peter O'Brien thing, superpower. But I think I'd be a little more likely to splurge on saves and steals.
Yeah. Now that bid was Fred Zinke, who's, you know, I think he's had more success.
Well, then it was brilliant.
Right, you know, he's had more success this league than anyone else, and it does make me wonder because he got Anderson and O'Brien, and usually it seems that Fred is making a trade in this league every week, and as opposed to this year where he's made a trade like every 3 weeks, so it does kind of make me wonder if he's had some difficulty on the trading front, so he feels he needs to, you know, kind of make up for it elsewhere. And, you know, the other difficult thing about this, you know, we talk about fab on the show every week, and we try to be general because, you know, you can't really spend like hours on the show being like, well, you know, Fred's got, you know, X number of points on offense, but X number of points on pitching. But I do find a little odd that Fred's toward the top in most of the offensive categories and kind of, except for wins, like toward the middle or bottom of most of the pitching categories. And he's spending all this money on hitting. But that is probably a testament to the way Fred plays and the idea that he's very good about trading and very active. And he probably feels like, oh, these guys will work out, or if they don't, or if they do, we can flip them for some pitching down the line.
Yeah, well, I mean, I remember during the draft, I was pretty excited because I picked next to him, and you know, he picked Altuve, and I felt pretty confident that Betts would make it back to me because Altuve and Betts seemed like a ridiculous pairing. I think actually no one else would do that pairing. He's like, that's fine. And he paired it with Lorenzo Cain, and he's somehow in the top three in homers. I mean, all three of them, I think he might have traded Cain, but all three of them are double-digit homers is kind of on the lucky side, particularly without two.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing that I might do if I wasn't like handcuffed to Brett, because you know I tend to go value over like – that kind of thing sometimes took at the beginning. Like I know we took Machado in the first round, and you know I was kind of trying to push Altuve up into that conversation a little bit, and you know Brett's like, nah, I'd rather Machado. I'm like, well, you know, I don't feel strongly enough to, you know, kind of, you know, like fight you on this. You know, I think they're close, and in the end, you know, we took Machado. It was, you know, it's been fine, but it's just one of those things where, you know, it is weird to see someone take like a lot of one category, another category. And, you know, I think Rudy is sort of a different discussion of how we kind of build our teams. You know, I know some people really just go value, value, value. And some people with their picks, I remember listening to your podcast about labor. You know, I think you're more of a, you're value, but you also kind of look at how your team is like after a certain point where you might be like, all right, now's time to take a pitcher, or you know, I should really take an outfielder or, you know, an infielder. So yeah, it's definitely philosophical and depends on, you know, how you go that way.
Yeah, I'm not a trader. Like I said, I do like to play the fab a lot and try to avoid, you know, just bad weeks. Particularly when, like, it seems like now there's a bunch of 5-game weeks out there, and if you've got a guy that, you know, maybe a lefty, and then they're throwing like a, you know, where he might only start 3-4 games, to use fab on those cases. But yeah, I try to add some balance to the team. But that tell you the truth, where I drafted, there was pretty much you can't do any wrong, or where you could, it was, I think, Keith Hernandez on the turn, because I ended up with Bryant and Marte, and if I got, it's like, that's not the, if I don't win the league, which is more than likely, I'm in the middle of the pack right now. It's not Carte there, you know. It's like to have Betts and Bryant, or Betts and, you know, if Betts and another power bat, I would have taken it too. Would have been nice, but you know, yeah, you can't really bemoan when you get good value on your first two picks.
Yeah, no, you're right about the turn. You know, we were there last year in 2015, and you know, even though our team, you know, we won, we had Tulo and Desmond at the turn in the first round. So yeah, a lot can go wrong there.
Yeah.
So anyone else you guys want to talk about from the free agent pickups in labor mix? There were some closer speculative moves there: Fernando Abad, Brandon Kinsler, guys like that. Couple other names.
Well, that's where it doesn't make any. That I gotta tell you, it doesn't make any. I don't know how you bid 13 for a bad and don't even show up for Estevez. I mean, McGee's got a sprained a bad knee, which is never a good thing for a pitcher. Like you know, he's kind of on a 1-year contract. I mean, it's ridiculous. We all remember. I think you probably agree that that trade didn't make much sense, why they're dealing for McGee and trading Dickerson kind of, you know, on the low side. But there's a decent chance Estevez sticks with it for the year. You know, so I don't – and Abad's already, we know, competing for it. So, yeah, it kind of surprised me. I'll give it to whoever did it, that if they have a certain instinct for it. And it's not like – having an antipathy toward Rocky pitchers is irrational. But that's a bit surprising to me.
You're right. At least there's a little bit more clarity with the Colorado situation. With Abbott and Kinsler, we don't really know who's going to merge with that job. There's always another dark horse that could. You just don't know. So there's a lot more risk in investing in those types of guys than someone like Estevez, who, you know, he's 3-for-3 in save opportunities. He could nail down, you're right, nail down that job the rest of the way if it came to that with McGee's injury situation. So yeah, I'm with you there.
Yeah, you could see Estevez getting like 15 to 20 saves the rest of the way. It's really hard to see anybody in that Twins bullpen doing that. And that's the thing. Like the Kinsler bid at 6, you know, and we bid, I think we bid 3 or 4 on him. I'm kind of fine with that. That's a low end bid. Yeah. And if he gets 5 to 10 saves, great. If he doesn't, you know, whatever. It's a, you know, $4 bid. No. You know, he went for 6. But bidding double digits for anyone in that bullpen, you know, $100 budget, no $0 bids. You know, unless you have a pile of money to burn, that's kind of questionable.
Yep, that's my thing. It's like, yeah, speculative bids, like $6 for a closer, or like $1 or $2 for a position player. Those are, you take your chances, and yeah, no loss if they fail. But yeah, it seemed like to me a little bit of an odd choice there, especially and Jason Mott went for 5. That I think the Jason Mott one smells like someone who put their fab in on Friday.
That's you know, that's possible. You know, we talked on, you know, I think it was Memorial Day weekend. There were some, you know, absence of bids, and you know, as an expert, I won't mention it. You know, wasn't you, Rudy? But there was an expert who kind of confided me on Memorial Day weekend. Yeah, I put my bids in on a Saturday morning. You know, it's one of those. It's how the sausage is made. You'd be surprised at how many experts like actually do that. So yeah, it happens. And you know, some of it is that some of us, including me and you know, and Brad and a number of us, we don't do this full time, so there is kind of that, like sometimes you have a weekend where you're just like, yeah, I've got a lot to do, and you know, if I get back on Sunday night from the beach and manage to fix my moves, great. If I don't, fine. But you know, on the other hand, with smartphones and technology, there really isn't much of an excuse for that.
Fair point. Anyone else here that you guys want to talk about, or I think we've pretty much covered everything relevant here.
Yeah, I think so too.
Cool. Rudy, you also compete in the Tout Mixed League draft. I understand you made one move there. You almost got Estevez, but you ended up with Justin Smoke. He's a guy you're kind of streaming. So if you want to briefly take us through how your team's looking in that league and where you stand and some of the moves you've made this year, that would be pretty cool.
Oh yeah, the Justin Smoke one isn't turning out so well with I think my formula for estimating NL games for AL players didn't work out so well because Smoke's been on the bench so far. But I think I had Adam Lind instead, and he was going to have a short week. But yeah, the Tout War is mixed. I'm in first right now. That was why I finished in a heartbreaking second last year. So yeah, I've had a good amount of good fortune there. But Smoke's, yeah, that's it. I kind of on a volume play. I mean, that's $8 out of 1,000 I bid on Smoke. So, yeah, that one, I mean, it's an on-base league, and I found that I think is being kind of a bit statty wonky helps more in an on-base percentage league. But I think those that play a little bit more kind of gut, I think, get hurt in the on-base leagues just because they're never able to fully compensate or figure out exactly how to bid on the on-base guys.
Yeah, that's pretty technical in terms of understanding that value for those types of guys. You're right. I'd agree with that. There's not a whole lot in Tout Wars AL. Daniel Mengen, I think I'm saying that right. I don't even know. He went for $186. Not a ton here. I don't know. Mike, anybody interesting to talk about on the AL side?
The one thing I want to talk about a little bit is just the trio of stashes this week. So there were 3 players who were stashed and touted. And we talk about this a lot on the show. We talk about the idea that you can take a player and, you know, keep him on your active roster for a week and then just, you know, go with zeros. And I think in a mixed league, I don't know how often you do this in the mixed draft, Rudy, if you do it at all, but in a mixed league, even in a 15-team mix, it doesn't make a lot of sense to do that, particularly on the hitting side, because you're taking zeros where you really want to get volume. But in an AL only... Yeah. Or maybe you know, it's two catcher leagues, so maybe a catcher, because, you know, sometimes your second catcher in those leagues are garbage, or, you know, if it's, you know, five bad starts from, you know, a bad OBP catcher, batting average catcher is worse than zeros. But yeah, otherwise you really don't want to, you know, play around too much with zeros. But over on the only leagues, it makes a lot of sense to kind of, you know, take these guys and speculate. And, you know, I thought all three plays were of varying interest. You see, Justin Morneau, Ike Davis, who, you know, actually is up already and playing, and he got a game in Colorado, which I thought was, you know, something else. And Arizmendi Alcantara, who was everybody's, you know, darling last year, and this year has just kind of been forgotten. And, you know, all three of those players, I guess I'll throw it to you, Rudy, to start with. So, you know, in an only league, you know, we're obviously talking about, like, super deep and, you know, that kind of speculation. Which one of these guys do you like rest of the way in terms of a spec play?
Well, the first thing I'd like to say is that I'm disappointed when you're talking about stashes and you didn't. I mean, Daniel Mengden definitely has the best stash.
I got that.
Out of all these guys.
He looks like ex Prospectus and current Sports Illustrated guy Jim Jaffe is what he looks like.
Yeah, I don't understand. I mean, they must be tempted to make him a closer in Oakland. It's worked before with Raleigh Fingers.
Oh, Chuck has the facial hair. Yeah, he's got, like, you know, on the scouting scale, he's got like 80 facial hair.
It's an 80. Yeah, I think no doubt. I mean, I think Ike Davis would. It's intriguing because he's going to Yankee Stadium. He looks like he has playing time. Teixeira is now rumored to be coming back soon, but if he is, he's probably only back for a short amount of time before something else happens. And there's, you know, and you have A-Rod at DH, who's kind of fragile. So I think that the Ike Davis bid makes the most sense out of those three. With Morneau, you know, I think the question is, you know, how much playing time is he going to get in Chicago? I mean, I guess there's room at DH, and it would probably help him with his head. But I'd probably go Ike Davis versus Morneau, just looking the bank immediate stats versus ones that are going to possibly happen in the future. Ike Davis is most likely going to crap out. I would have won Ike Davis in this league, would be what I'd come out. I probably would have bid like nominal on Morneau as a backup, but I would have probably bid, you know, 40-50 bucks for Ike Davis.
See, I think there's a lot of risk with Arizmendi Alcantara, but he is leading the Pacific Coast League in stolen bases, but I think it's 26 at this point, so there definitely is some speed there if you're looking at in an AL only, some you know, you need speed desperately. He's a guy I think I would take a flyer on if I had the fab to be able to do that.
To be fair, most people in the Pacific Coast League prefer just to hit home runs versus like go to the effort of hitting a single or walking and then stealing bases. Yeah, that's just not how it's done in that league.
That's true. I think he does have six home runs.
Not a lot of oxygen. Every stadium's a mile high. There's not a lot. You got to conserve your oxygen.
Yeah.
Although he was in Iowa for most of the year because that's where he, you know, he's with the Cubs and not the A's. So that's not the crazy power environment that, you know. I think the A's are the A's Sacramento still?
Nashville, the Sounds.
They're not.
Yeah.
The A's are Nashville now.
Yeah.
I can't even keep track of the PCL. I'm a bad fantasy expert.
No, it's they changed.
Well, it's hard
recently.
Yeah, when you think driving down the Pacific Coast Highway, you don't picture cornfields either. I forgot he's in Iowa, but so that's fair. I mean, if he comes up, it's great.
Yeah, Joey Gallo hit a home run into a swimming pool the other day. I don't know if you guys saw that in the PCL, but that was pretty cool. Just saying.
I go to the Round Rock games. He didn't hit a homer the game I was there.
He's been doing
That's all I paid. Yeah, they have. Yeah, I got to see Delino DeShields, strikeout and pop up. And Joey Gallo, I swear to God, he had a pop up. It went so high. It was like my highlight of the day. I was like, oh my God, that pop up was so high. Yeah. It's like I seem to be one of the only impressed people on that one.
Yeah,
you sound like the Russ Branyan fanboys from back in the day.
I was talking to Jeff Wilson of who covers the Rangers for the Fort Worth Star Telegram this off season, and he was saying that Joey Gallo's BP is worth the price of admission just to see that alone. Like, he'll just crush like 50 balls out of the yard, and it's crazy. So, pretty cool.
Yeah. Eventually they'll give him a shot. Eventually.
Yeah.
When they have to put Prince Fielder to pasture or something.
All right. I think we're good on the AL side. Edwin Diaz for a buck is interesting, too. There's a lot of velocity there up in Seattle. He's interesting. On the NL side, Estevez once again was the high bid at $509 out of 1,000. It's a pretty penny. Mike, do you know
That was Lenny Melnick. And, it's funny because Lenny's very anti-closer. So he probably – Lenny's so anti-closer that even when he lucks into a closer, like he drafted Cingrani cheap and now he's getting some saves, he tries to trade them as soon as he can. So this bid's a little weird from that regard. But, it's as far as the trade chip goes, he's a good one. So, why not?
Rudy, do you have any explanation for what's going on with Matt Garza? Because it looked like he pitched pretty well in his first start back to the Brewer rotation. I don't know what to make of it because we've kind of seen this from Garza before. He just hasn't really been good for a while. So,
no, it's been a long time since I remember. I mean, I feel like I got burned at least one or two of those years with him. So, I mean, it's interesting. He got a $231 bid, and the next one was $4. that's probably not the one that you want to see on Monday morning. You probably don't do like a Tiger Woods old school fist pump when you see that. You're kind of like, ooh, yeah, I won.
Well, now the guy who got him is in Wisconsin, so that might have something to do with him thinking, oh, people are going to bid on Garza, and nobody was interested.
Oh, is that Ambrosius or Kucinich?
No, it's Scott Wildman, the guy who runs like On Roto and is like a physicist in his real job.
What's up, Scott?
Well, he's smarter than us, so maybe he knows something on Garza. But NL only, I mean, I guess one way of looking at it is that he's probably assured starts as long as he's healthy. And, yeah, I mean, it is a brutal home park, though. That's really, like, it's almost the closest thing to, like, Coors Jr. out there.
Yeah.
Now that Texas, I feel like, took... Texas calmed down a bit. Texas used to be a clear number two. Fenway's always a scary one. But Milwaukee is not a fun place to pitch.
Yeah, speaking of brutal parts.
Especially, I think right-handed hitters there in particular, I don't know the numbers for it, I think right-handed hitters there in particular have like a field day.
Pretty much.
And this is probably just me, but, there's something. There's certain pitchers. Matt Garza's in there. Josh Beckett's in there. Clay Buchholz, son about the pictures that they have on all the fantasy sites or the baseball sites when you show a picture of them and they're just I forgot what we call we came up with a name with on Razzball, but I already have like a distaste for them because I don't want to have to like watch a game and then see his picture up there and go, oh, Matt Garza, why are you smiling at me like that with your little goatee or soul patch?
I remember he used to spit a lot when he was on the mound. That's kind of what I remember with Matt Garza. But
I think he was petulant. I think that's why Tampa Bay got rid of him. Or no, Minnesota. That was the Delman. That was the we'll trade you Garza if you give us Delman Young trade. Because Minnesota's just like, I think Minnesota didn't like the fact that he tried to strike people out. Minnesota's like, pitch the contact, please. That's all we want in Minnesota.
Yeah.
Just to dominate. It's like. Yeah, look what happened to Sin. Yeah, okay, I'll end that one. But yeah, it looked like a lot of bidding in NL. There's a few, some interesting over $100.
Some of that was me. I we were talking about misbids before, so I bid a relatively high amount, Albert Almora, and I was the only bidder on Zach Eflin. And, you know, with Almora, I was kind of going with talent over Coughlin, who certainly has more of an opportunity. And I did bid on Coughlin as one of the secondary bids, but I like going with talent over opportunity and only, particularly because a guy can come back, he can reemerge. You know, I've liked what I've seen from Almora so far. Not a big power bat for sure. You had a good game today. The defense certainly plays. I think they might send him back down, but I just don't mind making a move like this in an only. You know, and Eflin got destroyed, but you know, if you've been listening to the show, you know my NL only staff is just a complete mess. And at this point, I'm going for volume and trying to get what I can in strikeouts and wins and, you know, everything else. Well, I have saves in that league, but everything else just kind of like, well, you know, whatever happens in Grand Whip happens.
Yeah. Zach Eflin was great in High School Musical, so I'll give him that.
People do like that comparison or that joke.
It's so easy.
Yeah.
It's like hitting a Milwaukee. or hitting off Zach Eflin on Monday or Tuesday night.
Yeah, that was a terrible, terrible outing. I think it was, what, 8 runs in 2 or 3 innings or something like that?
I was off yesterday and I was with my kids and we went to the Statue of Liberty and then we went to the game with Brett, and it was just a good day to like be at the Statue of Liberty with my phone mostly off and just not like, you know, paying attention to that.
Oh boy!
There was a line that I think it was Alex Pat. You know, he said this years ago in one of his books. He said that, you know, some pitchers you want to watch like every start if they're on your team, and you know, other pitchers it's like you know, good day to go to the movies where you're like, all right, I'm just gonna go out. You know, if he does well, great. You know, and I'll come home and I'll be happy. But you know, if he doesn't, you know, I'm not gonna be sitting here miserable. You know, like watching him get destroyed.
That's a good point. I feel that way about like Julio Urias. Like I could watch him give up like 8 runs and be perfectly fine with it because it's kind of fun to watch him pitch overall. But other guys, it just bothers me when they get hit. Like Marcus Stroman to me, because he doesn't strike a ton of guys out and he's very precise. He throws a ton of strikes. So when he's getting crushed, it's like the worst feeling ever to watch. So I don't know. I agree with that. That's a good point. I like that.
I can't bear to watch Ian Kennedy starts. It's because when it goes bad, it goes so, so bad and so, so far.
Or James Shields. James Shields is terrible.
Oh, I had Shields. I almost won tout last year with Shields and Kennedy.
So I feel like he's almost entertaining based on how bad he's gotten. It's like, what will he do next?
Well, last year he still struck out 200. And that, you know, it's like nothing else on the transition from like AL to NL into Petco made any sense last year. Like, I have no idea why Shields doubled in walks last year.
All the home runs, too.
Yeah, none of those things made sense, but he still struck out 200 or so. But yeah, he took it. He's gone down an extra level.
Yeah.
But. He's still big game James, so if the White Sox make the playoffs.
Well, Pedro tweeted something about his mechanics being out of whack, and you know, I'm imagining, you know, Don Cooper, who's a, you know, considered a good pitching coach, I'm sure they're looking at that and, you know, whatever they can get out of Shields, and yeah, he's not the pitcher he once was, but whatever they can get out of him, they're gonna certainly try to do.
Oh, do either of you guys watch the draft, the broadcast of it on MLB Network?
No, was Pedro there?
Yeah, so that's my point. They had Pedro on. After every pick, they'd have like a former major leaguer like Sean Casey, Kevin Millar, which was hysterical, break down like the player's swing or their pitching mechanics. So Pedro would do some of the pitchers, and it was like the greatest 30 or 45 seconds of my life, like every time he would come on the screen. Like I could hear him talk about like a vacuum, and it would be entertaining to me. Like, well, the guy's
it's
amazing.
Such a dichotomy. I mean, like, Pedro Martinez is, you know, as knowledgeable as it gets. And he's entertaining, too. But even putting that aside, I mean, there's, you know, probably he's in a select handful of, like, you know, most brilliant pitchers of our lifetime. Yeah. Kevin Millar is not in a handful of anything.
Like, well, no, you know,
it's like, tell me about, like, handful of first base DH types that know how to rally clubhouses around cowboy themes. That would be Kevin Millar's. That would be Kevin Millar's niche.
He was great.
This guy's gonna cowboy things up.
He was great because he'd just come on and he'd be like, "Well, this guy, you know, he's kind of an athlete. I could see him getting in, hitting the ball in the gaps, you know, legging out doubles." And it's like, what are you talking about?
Because only athletes get doubles.
Yeah, he's like, "This guy's a
all those gap singles. Why can't he be more athletic?"
It's great stuff.
Well, we know what it is. There's some people who can. There's some people who can talk about baseball, and there's some people, you know, play it really well. The intersection of doing both seems to be very rare, and Pedro is just one of those guys who can do both extremely well.
Yeah, absolutely. Who else do we have here in the NL? I don't think there's anybody else really interesting. There was one stat. Go ahead.
I was surprised Zach Godley went for 191. I think that might just be he had a great start, didn't he? Or he won against Jose Fernandez.
He was good last year for a period too.
Yeah, I'd rather have Zach Godley than Matt Garza. I think that's like the devil.
Well,
that
was the same guy too who got both. So I think Scott like really needed pitching, and you know what I've noticed in expert leagues is you sometimes have this week where, you know, this goes back to what you mentioned before, Rudy, about people, you know, putting their bids on a Friday where people are, this is a dirty secret about the expert leagues. I think some people half pay attention. And then they suddenly start paying attention, and then they, you know, make all their moves at once. So this is probably a case of Scott looking at the standings. I really need pitching, and maybe these weren't the best guys for him, but he just kind of wanted to make his play now.
I'm picturing like him at the craps table, and you know he's been even all night, maybe a little down. And he's like, I gotta go to the bathroom. I'm just putting all the chips in.
That's a good like, analogy.
It's like, yeah, I mean, it's Garza and Godley. Yeah, it may crap out. We'll
see.
He did get to successfully pee.
Well, the other thing with the $1,000 budget is that you can, you know, you did this with Smoke in the mix. You have the opportunity, if you spend like $500 or $600 of your budget early, to make a bunch of low bids, and you might not get a lot of the guys you want. But especially in only, it almost doesn't matter because the players out there, most of the free agents out there are just going to be bad. And we know that. Like, you know, George, we talk about this every week, and we talk about AL only and NL only. How many of these guys really break out to do anything, you know, in the course of the season? I think by my valuations in only last year, there were maybe like 10 hitters who earned in double digits. And maybe 13 to 15 pitchers. Given all the free agents we speculate on, that's not a lot.
Yeah, if you're talking about straight fab, there's not a ton. I mean, most of them, the good examples of them are guys who didn't start the year in the majors, or they struggled and were sent down. They made adjustments in the minor leagues and then came back up. Like a good example this year would be like a guy like James Paxton, I think has a shot to really return some earnings. I think he could be a guy who fits into that category like you talked about, because, you know, started the year in the minors, now he's throwing 98-99, and he's gonna strike guys out. So I think you're right, though, the examples of actually guys performing are few and far between. That's a good point. There was $1 guy I liked, Chad Kuhl from Pittsburgh. He was stashed for $1. I don't know who did it, but prior to his last three starts, he's given up more runs in June than he did in the first 2 months of the year. But he still has – his ERA on the year is 2.54 with Indianapolis and AAA. I really like him. I think he's been pretty good this year. He could get a shot in Pittsburgh at some point later in the year. So I didn't think that was a terrible stash. There were a couple other guys who got – like Manny Margot and guys like that who got picked up as well. I have no idea what's going to happen with that San Diego outfield. So your guess is as good as mine. Anything else here, or we're good? I think we're good on fast.
I'm good. I'm good unless Drew wants to, you know, talk about one of these marginal players.
No, no. I don't have an opinion on Boone Logan.
Nor should you. I wouldn't expect that. I know, Mike, you wanted to talk a little bit about valuations. I know we kind of touched on it a little bit earlier, but I know both of you are really involved in that process. So I think that's some interesting insight for our listeners who are into that sort of thing.
I wanted to give the floor a little bit to our guests, because you know you guys over at Razzball, well, you do a lot of good work there, Rudy. But you have a in-season valuation tool, and you know Baseball Prospectus has one too through Pecota. It's called the PFM, which is the Player Forecast Manager. But I just kind of want to get some insights into your valuation tool and how it works, and you know what people going to your site can expect or what they see when they go over there and they're looking for in-season valuations.
Yeah. So we're valuing just about everything. So a lot goes into doing the preseason, then we're doing season to date, rest of season, and we have daily and weekly as well. But on the I think rest of season is. There's not a lot that do it. I think Baseball Prospectus is one of the only other ones that does a rest of season player rater. There's a couple things. I think the biggest challenge when people are looking at these player raters is just focusing only on like the dollar values, because you got to remember when you're looking at rest of season, it's not unless you prorate it, you're looking at like abstract things like 14 homers for the rest of the year. Now it sounds concrete, it's not abstract, but it's like 14 homers for the rest of the year. I don't know what that means. I have to multiply it by, I have to remember how many games there are, and oh yeah, 14, that's pretty good. It's a 30 homer hitter. So people are going right to the dollar value. And I mean, I think that there's a number of different ways people do the dollar values. I think mine's, more or less the same as everyone. I mean, I think everyone converges on the same spot, just attacks it a different way. And I know we've had a couple of Twitter conversations on that. But my goal is I want to make sure people make the best decisions. So we put in things go ahead, Mike.
Well, I was just going to say, I know we've joked about this. We're in a lot of expert leagues together. We're in the CBS leagues. I've been back and forth. Like you're in one and Gray's in the other. Right now I'm in one with A. You're in the AL only version of CBS. We're in a Razzball league together that's a 12-team mixed league that you guys run. And what I find is that, we're going to have to call this episode Dirty Little Secrets of the Experts or some long, convoluted title. A lot of experts don't really lean on valuation as much as like I would have expected when I started doing this and rubbing elbows with the experts. You guys really, you're good. You're flexible and you're very good at adjusting during your drafts or auctions, but you're more like me. I kind of hate drafting against you in these leagues. I especially hate auctioning against you because you guys both really seem to stick to values, whereas I notice a lot of people don't.
Yeah, auctions especially, you kind of have to stick to your values and have trust in them, because once you go a couple dollars too much here and there, you suddenly go off the rails and you're running out of money and you're having trouble rounding out your roster. I think especially on those AL and NL only, I think 12 to 15 team auctions, I haven't really done many, but I'd be a little bit more open to stars and scrubs. But if I was going to do that, I would basically figure out the dollar values ahead of time. It doesn't make sense to me to be like, okay, well, everything considered, I still spent $3 more than I had them at. It's like, if you want to spend $3 more, you should just, if you wanted to kind of go that far off what's on your spreadsheet, you should have just made the adjustments ahead of time.
Yeah, mixed auctions are really weird. So I've watched Brett did his first mixed auction this year in Tout, and I've watched those auctions or pieces of those auctions, and I guess I'd say the difference this applies I think both with valuation and with actually seeing the auctions in practice. You don't have much of a replacement level pool, particularly during the auction in an NL or AL only. So it makes it really difficult because you're just kind of bidding the guys at value. Whereas in a mixed league, it's sort of this example. This is kind of what I try to explain to people. I have a hard time understanding. It's like, well, in theory, you know, even if Mike Trout is, you know, only three times better, you know, I'm just making this up, than the average hitter, or four times better in a 15-team mix, you're paying more than four times that because, you know, it's sort of the idea that the guy at the bottom of the pool in the 12 or 15 team mix is eminently replaceable. Whereas Mike Trout, if he does what Mike Trout does every year, is not replaceable. You just can't find another Mike Trout. You know, that sounds really simple, but people really lose that when it comes to valuing players in a mixer.
Yeah, I think in a mixer, I mean, every year I do this, I think I get more and more modest, or I think humble would be the right word, because I think I don't know if I'm really modest, but it's humbling when, like, you look back and you say, oh man, I was so wrong on so many players. We all are. I mean, I think, you know, so I think when you look at it and say, like, okay, someone like Trout is coming in at like no risk. Like, I mean, if there's any risk in Mike Trout, let's just say that's like, no one has less risk than him. And you maybe you want to say the same thing for Kershaw from pitchers, but, you know, more risk just because elbows and UCLs and stuff. So you go, Trout's got no risk. The thing is, once you get into things like, you know, the equivalent of like $10 bids, maybe 10th round, 15th round. I mean, there is a bunch of guys I liked. I mean, I got a few on a couple teams like Ozuna. But then there, you know, but there's guys in that round. I like Gerardo Parra. You know, that clearly hasn't worked out super well. And then there's guys that were available on free agent dollars. Like I got in Tout, I got Leonis Martin pretty early. Once I saw DeShields was not going to have a good sophomore year. So I see it as that, okay, well, in a mixed league, take the zero-risk high-end guys because your third, fourth, especially your fourth, fifth outfielders, your MI, your CI, consider them fungible. And that comes out of, like, playing with in the Yahoo Friends and Family League and our Razzball Commenter Leagues. We're in 12-team daily with, like, minor with no fab. You learn a good amount of your positions have to be fungible. And that's where, so if you go in with that mindset, then yeah, you could really justify spending more for your top 8-9 players and then, you know, take more chances where, you know, especially as you get into like SP5 and everyone kind of has a differing opinion.
Well, and those SP5. And, you know, even as you said, your middle infielders, your corner, you're the last guy on your offense. How often, you know, even a 15 team, but how often a 12 team does that guy work out where you just hang on to him all year? You know, in the best case scenario, you wind up with somebody you're like, yeah, this guy's pretty good, but he's never your superstar. He's usually just somebody who's kind of a reliable, a kind of middle of the offense player, or, you know, an SP3 as opposed to a true ace. You know, a lot of those guys you just won't find in the free agent pool because, as you point out, it's such an unpredictable idea. The idea that these guys are, we all know what we're talking about, we're all very good at what we're doing, but the idea of the season is going to play out exactly the way that we think it is. You know, if that were going to happen, you know, this is like such an old bromide, you know, we just go to Vegas and bet on the games and be millionaires because that's, you know, it would be much better doing that than doing this. You know, nobody really knows what's going to happen during the season. That's what makes it interesting.
Right. No, well, I mean, but I think just as if like that MI you take late in the draft is kind of, let's say, has not so good. It's like those second basemen are you're taking the 12th, 13th round. The shortstops, they're not so great. So, you know, waiting an ex, you know, like, so the equivalent of basically getting a 20th round MI. I mean, this year I thought, you know, Jonathan Scope was one guy that, you know, I loved the power upside. You can get him cheaper than some of the guys that might be going a bit earlier. So
yeah, I think we did that in labor. Like we were kind of waiting on middle infielders. I was getting antsy, and, you know, we got Neil Walker and Marcus Semien like late. And we were fine with that. We're like, you know what? We know that, you know, these guys aren't going to be spectacular, but they should provide some power. They've exceeded expectations. And, you know, our third MI is Drupal Cabrera. You know, he's just been okay. But it is kind of an idea. There's so much variability that unless you're talking about a star or somebody who's near the top of the, you know, top of the heap, it kind of turns back to valuation. Valuation is like really interesting, and I really enjoy it. But if you get locked too much into valuation when you're constructing your team, especially the shallower the league gets, you just can get yourself into a lot of trouble.
Yeah, so that's why I like to, you know, I've done more kind of, I wouldn't say as much mock drafting. I definitely don't like to mock draft with other people. But some of the, you know, but I kind of look at drafts and how I could see it plotting out, you know, to kind of prepare for all these kind of, and come up with a team I like. And I think this year specifically, I kind of focused a bit more on, you know, trying to target guys that I just kind of liked, that, you know, the values lined up as well, but that, you know, occasionally I would, you know, say, okay, well, if I want AJ Reed and I really wanted AJ Reed in RCL, or I'm sorry, in labor, you know, I think this is the round I have to get him. You know, maybe the round right before all the prospects start going off. That one has
I kind of have a rule of 30 when it comes to that, and like, you know, just for labor. And the rule of 30 is, you know, I if it's a 15 team league, I kind of rank the guy two rounds ahead of where, you know, I think he should be. Now, if I'm in a league with somebody, you know, this is one good thing about doing the mocks or about, you know, talking to people. So if I'm in a bunch of mocks with Todd Zola, just to use him as an example, and I see that he loves Ketel Marte and he's taking him early everywhere, I'll move Marte up even more if I like him. And if I'm in, you know, a league like labor, because I'm like, all right, well, you know, if I have Marte ranked, you know, in you know, just preseason in the 17th round, and I see Zola's taking him in like the 13th or the 14th, I'm going to have to make a decision. Like, you know, where is it appropriate to take Marte versus where do I go? Okay, well, I like Ketel Marte, but I don't like him that much.
Yeah, well, I don't get into the mock. I kind of see it silly to give up. I feel like that's intel. So I already provide every single a projection for every single player on Rasball, which I use. I mean, you know, there's some things I do where I might, for my personal use, maybe weight a one category a little more than the other. But for the most part, I've given away the state secrets. So I don't want to do like the mock drafts. Yeah, I think there's certain – I kind of find it where it's like I like guys. I don't even do rule of 30. I mean, I almost maybe go an extra round up. But I'm pretty stingy to a fault. And I mean, like, it's sometimes – you know, I think a good amount of time it works out because – but – and then just I think part of the humbleness is knowing that it's like, I don't know, just because I like them now doesn't really mean much because – I could tell you in labor, one of the Howard Bender's team, which I think is doing really well, he drafted two guys that were high on my likely to draft list, which were Wei-Yin Chen and Gerardo Parra. Those were guys that I had going. I liked multiple rounds ahead of the consensus. And he was on them. And he drafted them like two or three rounds before I had them. Or maybe when I had them, but I knew I should be able to get them later. And it's like, let them go. What kind of? Well, once they draft them, you don't really have a choice. It's not like it was being magnanimous to me. It's like, okay, it's your pick. You want them.
Yeah, the draft's a little bit different. What I do find, to kind of go back to your point about the intel, I agree about that to a point. But I also find I don't know if it's that other experts are so busy at that time of year, or they're looking inward so much. People don't pay as much attention to what I have to say, or experts in particular, as you might think. Now, what I found really funny about that, so before 2015, you know, last year I had this really good year, you know, and I agree a lot of that's, you know, luck as opposed to skill. But, you know, so Brent and I won labor and I won Tout Wars. this year in Towers, I just got hammered. It was the first year where I think people, because I won, you know, I published my bid limits and, you know, published valuations. I could kind of tell how people were really looking at that and coming after me on specific players. Certainly not everybody, but in an auction, all you really need are two or three people coming after you, and it makes all the difference in the world.
That's true. I've been. It's one of my strategies, you know, not to win any of these leagues to avoid that from happening.
Yeah, well, you've come close enough now in the mixed draft to you know, you're in danger of letting that go.
I know. Yeah, last year I was fifth in that labor. I mean, it was really a two-horse race between you and Zinke, if I recall correctly, with your amazing pitching staff. You know, pretty much, I think once in a lifetime. When I say once in a lifetime, our lifetime, not just your teams an amazing,
We drafted Arrieta, Cole, and DeGrom. And the funny thing was, I think we took them like 6-8-9 or 7-8-9.
Right.
And, our first pitcher was Adam Wainwright, who we took in the fifth, who his Achilles ruptured.
Right, and then you had the Desmond Tulo picks, which didn't work out well. No, I mean, I think when you see things like that, it very well could be. I don't know. It felt like a little bit. I think every draft, I feel like there's one or two people that seem to be on my wavelength. Whenever I have to draft against Derek Carty, I feel like, you know, there's a similar amount of guys that we seem to draft. I think you, there's definitely, I mean, there's a number of times drafting next to Zinke where, you know, I think I got him a couple of times, but he probably got me more.
that all, you know, in draft versus an auction, that kind of always happens. And I think some of that is just whether you agree with the person or not, you just wind up at a point where there's so much similarity. You know, so if you've got a list of five guys and you're like, okay, I'm going to take one of these five guys, chances are good, unless it's somebody going way off the board or drafting for need. You know, even like in the eighth or ninth round, you're going to be pretty close on, you know, who's there and, you know, who's a good value or who's a good fit.
Yeah. No, that was basically my learning. I think the Larry Schechter book really helped with that. But starting with last year's drafts, it was a lot of plotting out where I think, you know, where I thought people could draft and building and trying to figure out, like, even, I mean, I've got a thing that figures out or tries to estimate a percent chance a guy's going to be available at my given draft slot. And using that as kind of a gauge. And I think for things like it definitely, yeah, there's certain drafts, it depends on how long people take, but if people are taking like a good 60, 90 seconds per pick, I found it definitely helps. And like I said, yeah, it's like, you know, there's going to be guys that go right before you, or, you know, you get at the tail end of a run, but the more you learn to kind of anticipate them. And to me, it's like kind of combining gut, you know, sometimes you just have that feel something's going to happen with like a reliever run, and then combining it with the data. Yeah, it's so far it's been a good 2-year run on the mix. Now I just need some I need some of that to sprinkle onto the Yahoo friends and my Yahoo friends and family team, where you did that league once, right?
Were you in it last year? I was in it last year as a sub.
Brutal, isn't it?
Because he had another commitment. I did not really like that league.
Yeah, it's you know, George, it's got and for the other listeners, they've got, you know, the Yahoo League is one where it's got like Chris Liss and Jeff Erickson from RotoWire, two fellows from RotoWorld, you know, several guys on Yahoo, and you will never pick up anyone. You'll never pick up a closer. It's like everyone's gone like the second the news breaks.
Well,
I think it's actually the second before the
Razzball League is like that too, to some degree. Like you're the league you run. Like I picked up Kinsler and Estevez like in a first come first serve. I think it's the first time I've ever gotten a closer like based off of breaking news. I never seem to be around.
Oh yeah, no, that league. I mean, yeah, a lot of the tools I developed is kind of to counter that, and that the thinking is that, yeah, you've got to learn to. Yeah, in that league, it's, you know, holding on to middle relievers that, you know, or either that are showing good skills, and, you know, it's not even that they're in a good position to inherit, because most, I think, mid-season relievers tend to be from injuries that, I mean, I don't know the numbers, but, you know, like waiting for a reliever to fail isn't necessarily the best strategy. Sometimes they just break.
Yeah. See, just when you think you've got it all figured out with relievers, like my great example is Ken Giles. Like, he's the shining example of,
he killed me.
Yeah, guy with great skills, put it all together, shined in a setup role, excelled in a limited closing role at the end of last year.
A fortune for him.
Yeah, the big trade happens. You think, all right, he's got a job. He's gonna perform and. Nope, nothing. So,
I will say this. Yeah, I will say this. I think, yeah, like the Toronto situation didn't make any sense to me. I did bet on Storen on a couple leagues just because it didn't make sense, since he threw such a hissy fit when Papelbon became closer. I don't understand why you trade for Storen to be your setup guy.
Yeah.
And he's failed in that role. So I think that was just dumb of Toronto.
Mike had this point
on the Giles. I do think Giles would have been the closer if he didn't have such a subpar preseason. He blew it. It's, yeah, you know, where I think Storen, I think he had a pretty good preseason. I think that was just kind of maybe that was a upper management versus manager disagreement.
Yeah. Mike had... Yep, Mike had this point before the show. He said it's June 15th and Fernando Rodney still hasn't given up a run. So, what do we know.
I drafted Quackenbush in labor. I then dropped him. I had Moore, Brandon Moore, for a bit. Yeah, then you just kind of give up.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. I could listen to you two guys talk about expert drafts and valuations all day long. This has been a fascinating conversation to me.
What about New Jersey area pork products?
Yeah, that's true. That's a conversation best saved for another day, I think.
Yeah, well, Rudy, we'll have to have you back on in the preseason when, you know, we really dive into this stuff and kind of, you know, kind of jump in. But before we go, just, you know, to tell our listeners, like, you know, tell us what you're doing at Razzball, particularly because, you know, at Baseball Prospectus, you know, obviously we're baseball and we don't offer fantasy products for other sports, but you guys do. So tell us what you're working on right now for other non-baseball sports that our listeners might be interested in.
Yeah. So our, you know, our foundation was in baseball, but we have, and you know, I think the core of Razzball is, you know, is talking about fantasy sports, how you talk about it with your knowledgeable buddies. We're not going to throw a lot of stats at you. We're going to basically make and crack a lot of jokes, be way crueler to players than we would if we had to actually face them at any time. So it is written kind of in a mom's basement kind of tone. And so we've got that for baseball, football, basketball, hockey, and soccer. Now, baseball has been kind of our core. That's been, you know, it's kind of my number one passion. So I've, you know, we've kind of taken projections about as far as you can go there. We're looking to expand. We're going to go into expand that for football and basketball. So hopefully call more attention to the content there, because we're putting together some good content there. And kind of seeing it that I look at the fantasy sports space, it's kind of a spectrum. And, you know, I'll go to Fangraphs if I want to get certain kind of stats-related stuff. And there's some really interesting articles that say, and actually I'll go to Baseball Prospectus for this too, for, you know,
great stuff about like why is a pitcher maybe turning, you know, a corner, stuff that I'm never going to get from, you know, even watching. You know, it's like, and I think Roswell kind of is that part of the spectrum, like, you know, I kind of want breaking, I kind of want the news of what happened yesterday, but keep me entertained, please.
Yeah, you know, it's the spirit of like the old, you know, if you're old enough to remember the old Rotisserie League baseball books, which really weren't, you know, there was some analysis, but they were really just chock full of like jokes and humor and fun. And you know, it's something that kind of gets lost with some people with fantasy baseball. I want to win, and you know, I love analysis, but it definitely should be fun. And yeah, your site is a fun site without a doubt, and it's definitely worth, you know, going over there and giving it a read.
Yeah, it's, and yeah, I think it is one of those that if you want, we spend way too much time, and not just us, but probably if you're listening to this, you spend way too much time on fantasy sports. We know that. it is your responsibility, knowing you know way too much on this stuff, not to use that for comic fodder and for references that no one gets. So, you know, you're all probably, you know, so you know, yeah, probably might know too many like Simpsons references. I know you do, Mike. You know, you might know like too many, you know, general pop culture stuff. It's like you deserve to be rewarded for knowing this type of ridiculous stuff.
I'll boil it down even four words. Four words. Five words. Your hobby should be fun. Your hobby, you know, if you're doing this and you're spending most of your time with this, your hobby should be fun. And if it's not fun, and if you're just kind of doing nothing, you know, but crunching numbers and looking at a spreadsheet and, you know, barely watching the games, which is a cliche, you probably shouldn't do it, or you probably should try to lighten up a little bit, because it's definitely what we do, as great as it is, as much I love it, it's definitely absurd. And I think most of us who do this well, like, kind of know that about ourselves.
Yeah. So, making jokes out of it. My blog, Barnard Gray Albright does the vast, vast majority of the writing. I do almost every headline, but he does pretty much everything else. I maybe get a joke in there every now and then if I'm feeling a bit saucy. But yes, it's, just think of it from that angle, which comes naturally to us because we're both wise asses. Definitely helps kind of take the edge off the competitiveness and the unhealthiness of this passion. But I mean, do you know anyone whose hobbies are really, truly healthy? And if you do, are you friends with them? It's like, I run and do yoga. It's like, oh, yeah, well, I guess you won't be around for a beer, so sorry.
Yeah, my wife.
You're
my
more
wife
flexible
is a big,
than me. You win.
My wife is a big U2, the band, obsessive, and, you know, she could definitely relate to my obsessiveness with this for that reason. And so, it's good to a degree, it's good to have your obsessions.
Yeah, I don't know. At what point have you tried to make make Bono references? Like, you know what Bono would say about this, and then say something just so annoying that Bono would say.
I just reference a South Park episode where he was featured, which if you've seen it, you know what I'm talking about, and that usually gets her really upset.
I just remember that one time in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame where he's like, shame on human, or something like this, or just like, oh my god,
yeah.
why did they let him talk?
Now, see, U2 is a little bit before my time, but I know The Edge. His name is just The Edge, correct?
George is 15, by the way, Rudy. Just to let you know.
I'm not actually 15, but yes. Yeah. In pop culture years, yes, probably. That's a fair statement. See, Talladega Nights is more of my like sweet spot, you know. That's my range.
I'm not familiar with that band. Are they out of Ireland as well?
No.
That's good. That's good stuff.
All right, we're gonna take a quick break. We'll come back and wrap things up here on Flags Fly Forever. back. Thank you for listening to episode 95 of Flags Fly Forever. This has been a Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. Subscribe today with a one-year premium membership to read Mike and I and the entire BP Fantasy team at baseballprospectus.com. Sign up for a super premium membership. You get access to the Bat Signal, our personalized fantasy answering service. Don't forget, follow us on Twitter. Mike is at Mike Gianella. I am at George Bissell. That's with two S's and two L's. And our special guest tonight, Rudy Gamble, is at Rudy Gamble. You can email us, flagsflyforever@baseballprospectus.com. Don't forget, rate, review, subscribe on iTunes and all of that goodness. I want to thank our guest once again, Rudy Gamble at Razzball, for coming on. Rudy, it's been a pleasure. We're going to have to do this again soon.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks for coming on, Rudy.
So for Rudy Gamble and Mike Gianella, this is George Bissell saying thanks for listening. Until our next show, we're going to be back with Brett Sayer next week. Good night, everybody.
Bye-bye.